Bellamy. Bad day to be my ex. On Radio 3. Got an amber rainstorm warning and a thunderstorm warning until at least 2:30. I'm going to cheer you up now by whizzing over to Melbourne, where the weather's bound to be worse, and say hi to Morris. How are you?
Yeah, happy Tuesday, everyone. The weather's not worse. It's chilly, but it's a blue sky out there.
Oh, good to be back with you, Morris. So anyway, I was reading your blog because last week, if you remember, it was the first time Morris and I had caught up after his wonderful holiday. And he says, I'm just getting ready to, you know, spew forth. And you've been quite prolific with your blogging, haven't you?
Yeah, I've had all this pent-up energy. What can I do?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Been riding away.
It's always a good read if you want to check it out, morrisfuturist.com. So today we want to talk about an onanist robot, kind of. What have you got?
Kind of, sort of. So this is a robot, think humanoid, in other words, human type, you know, the things that we see in all the movies that we think all the robots are going to look like. Two arms, two legs, a kind of human-looking face. Yeah. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about. But we're talking about a robot that's not Betty, you know, from Jetsons. In other words, it's not some fictional piece. It actually exists. It works, which is unusual because we have our friend Elon that's been talking about it for a long time but doesn't actually have one.
Can I just chuck in one thing before you tell us all about it? I think the one thing that will fascinate people about this is very, very simple. It looks like a human.
Yeah,
I mean, if you had a forklift truck that changed its own battery, no one would care.
No. No, they wouldn't. I mean, they would. Well, people in warehouses would, but you and I wouldn't get excited by it at all.
Go on then.
But this is, as you said, an absolute looking human. It's the thing that we've always imagined in our sci-fi. It's called UB Tech, the letter U, B, Tech. And right. For its mates, it's called Walker 2.
Okay.
Walker S2, I should say, humanoid. Now, it's a robot, as you said. It is built. It is working at the moment. It comes out of China. And it's claim to fame. The thing that does very different from every other robot is most of them die at some point. In other words, needs a recharging because it works on the battery,
sure. Goes
to sleep or does something else. This one actually senses that its battery is low. It runs over to the corner or wherever you've placed its bits and pieces.
One.
Yeah, it pulls the battery out of the rack, one that's ready to go, takes out its existing one and puts the new one in and just keeps going. And just does that all day, every day.
The only thing immediately that springs to mind is a very, very obvious one, and that's wear and tear on the moving parts.
Yeah, but wear and tear on the moving parts takes a while. I mean, you still get 24/7 operation out of it if you want, and of course it'll need service, it'll need downtime. I can't imagine this thing will work 24/7 every day, but it might in some factories. But it's an interesting possibility now.
Yeah.
We have things like the big warehouses, which are Amazon, which do picking and packing. And that's technically what warehouses are called, picking and packing. Picking is taking it off the shelf, running around, finding where it is on the big warehouse shelves, which are really, really tall, maybe 5 or 6 or 7 stories, literally tall.
Yeah.
And packing is taking those bits and pieces over to a central place, putting them in a box and putting them at the back of a truck to send out.
Sounds so simple when you get your socks from one of these companies. But when you imagine what it really looks like in those joints, I bet.
Oh, it's phenomenal. You know, I've seen inside an Amazon warehouse, and they have this thing on toast. You know, they've got so many billions and trillions of dollars. To them, it has to be absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
It is the most extraordinary thing you will ever see. It is, and I'm not, it depends which one you go into, but these things are often 10, 12 stories high. So I'm talking building, you know, they're huge things.
Crazy.
And they are full of shelves, incredibly full of shelves, very, very narrow corridors between them. And they have this, it's a robot, but not like the one we're talking about. It's actually attached to all of the shelves and it jumps around. Doesn't make sense, but just go with me on this. Do you remember the thing, the hand from the Addams Family that runs around and picks things up? So if you have a mental note of that, it's not that, but it's kind of like that. So you have this electronic hand that runs around up and down all these stories, literally 10, 12 stories high, runs up and down the racking, finds what you want, pulls it out and plops it into a bucket.
Steampunk that, and you've got like Jules Verne, haven't you? One of the great big
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the traditional way that these huge mega warehouses work, and they have hundreds of thousands of these little hands, so-called, running around picking and packing, and it literally goes out the back door to a truck that's waiting for it. This is meant for small to medium warehouses.
Yeah.
It's meant for the operation where people now are walking around these things and doing the picking and packing. This thing, most probably, we're not quite sure, but It seems to cost somewhere between 30 and 40,000 US, and that's not a lot of money when you talk about salary that you might be paying somebody. So it's totally accessible for a lot of companies. And what it does is once you've programmed this thing, once it knows the warehouse, knows the shelves, knows how to pick what it's looking for and the rest of it, it will just go and do it day in, day out. As I said, when it's feeling a bit tired and a bit run down, it'll just go over, pull out the battery, recharge yourself and just keep on going.
If you're listening to us now and you've got a minute to do a bit of surfing, get onto Morris's blog, morrisfuturist.com. Now, this is fascinating reading, as always, but there's a brilliant picture of the robot changing its battery, and it looks like it's sticking it up its own, you know.
Yeah,
it does.
There's also a YouTube video I've planted into there too that you can have a look at it running around.
Why make it humanoid just because you can? Is that it? Is it fun?
Yeah, look, there's really two camps. It always has been, going back literally 100 years before we had robots.
Yeah.
There's always been two basic camps. One is it has to look like a humanoid because people will play nicer with it, and that's this whole psychological belief that if you see something that kind of looks human, even though you know it's not, subconsciously you'll still play nice with it.
Does it summon your primal bits where you have EQ with it or something?
It absolutely does. And again, I know Jetsons was a cartoon, but think of the way they interact with that. That's why, again, our friend Elon Musk with his new robots has also gone down that road.
Yeah.
And most in-home robots, or most ones that are planned for in-home, have either a human or a pet or an animal or something that we can relate to.
It's a tactile version of prompt engineering, isn't it, where you told us that if we say please and thank you to an AI, which does work, by the way, it will respond.
It does, doesn't it? It's strange.
It does.
Yeah.
It's really strange. But if you do, it does seem to play nicer, or maybe we're just kinder to it.
Well, you said it's because it was trained by humans. I mean, it does make sense. You feel a bit daft doing it, but it works.
Yeah, it does. It truly does. So this thing is exactly that, the humanoid. Now, what's interesting in this, and this is where we start to get sci-fi and we start to worry about it because they're all going to run out, you know, burst out of the door of the factory and take over the world, is if you can afford enough of these things, and you most probably need more than one if you're running a warehouse, these things work in what's called swarm intelligence. Swarm intelligence, which has been around for quite a while, means that a robot can talk to the main machine, can talk to the human, but can also talk to each other. In other words, I'm going over there, I'll get this thing for you, or go and find that for me when you're over in that corner and bring it to me. And it does more than that. But they literally can not talk as we are, but they can send messages to each other backwards and forwards, and in a swarm mentality, get things done collectively.
Right.
And that's without a whole lot of extra programming.
It sounds pretty cool, Morris. I think that's what a lot of people are going to be saying. Yeah, why not? It sounds pretty cool. But does it do the job?
Oh, it absolutely does. So we need to put this into perspective. I've just described picking and packing, you know, how tall and how many stories there are. Mm. This thing, as you've said rightly, is human. It can't jump. It's not Superman. So if it's more than one or two racks up, it just can't reach it. So it's stuck to the ground. That's the first thing. And in a warehouse, that's important because a lot of what a warehouse does is not stuck to the ground. You get in a fork truck or a forklift or whatever you want to call it, or a scissor lift or whatever, and it goes up and gets things. So that's its first limitation. It can or might not be a limitation depending on the warehouse. You obviously wouldn't buy it if you needed it to go up and down. But that's the first thing. It's not going to work everywhere. But it can do it. But more importantly for me is that this technology, this swap-out battery technology, is more interesting than the robot itself, because think about how many things now have these batteries in them, and we might be able to use these swap-out technologies on those.
It's kind of still pretty funny. I mean, why doesn't it go and stand next to a magnetic charger or something? It actually takes a brick and puts it inside itself. I mean, it's funny.
Because it's quicker. It's quicker. Absolutely. So think of the home. A number of people have that home vacuum cleaner, that thing that buzzes around and does it. When it's tired, it goes over to its base and it recharges itself. And that can take a minute, can take an hour, but it's not doing anything in downtime. In a factory, you just can't afford
swap
the downtime.
Out,
it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And it literally is under 3 minutes is what it says out of the box and what they claim it does. So under 3 minutes, it's gone away, hasn't been told to do it, and it's back in work 4 minutes later. It's better than a cigarette break. It's better than a lunch break. It's much quicker and over sooner.
So obviously certain things are very much designed for certain tasks. So what I'm getting from your explanation today is this isn't like some wonderful free-thinking problem-solving. It's really good at the repetitive stuff.
It's the repetitive stuff, and this comes straight out of a computer. I mean, someone has told it, this is the picking schedule. I need 3 cans of tuna, a can of corn, and whatever else, and it knows exactly where they are, and it goes and gets it and pops it into a box and will send it out the back door because you've told it to do it, and it will just keep taking those instructions over and over again and keep doing that.
This is cool because in his article, somewhere in the middle, it says with the Walker S2, the answer is clear. So repetitive high-frequency stuff, as we're talking about now, it, yes. Battery maintenance, uptime, logistics, machine plus AI. But then it says system oversight, ethics, etc., human. It's very clear, isn't it?
It is for me. And I'm hoping that's how we always use it. Mm. You know, those scenes where Arnold Schwarzenegger is being chased out the factory warehouse by these things, I hope it never comes true. There's an off switch. I mean, literally, let's turn the damn thing off if it ever does it. But we need to be mindful, and this is the way that I'm always selling it to clients, to audiences, is that we are in charge of it. It's a tool like a hammer, like a screwdriver, like anything else. There's a warehouse. We need things done. We can use a fork truck. We can use all sorts of things. Now we can also use this Walker S2 humanoid robot to get it done. That's all that its purpose in life is.
One more of that. It doesn't interact with us, does it? Because that would be a whole different ballgame, wouldn't it?
It doesn't interact with us. It has built-in safety, so it's not going to run us over, and that's important. And a lot of machines in the warehouse do that because warehouses are actually frenzied spaces.
Yeah.
People are running around like mad chooks in them. And there is a whole lot of OH, and it's occupational health and safety issues that could be on. This thing, of course, is built so that it can't fall over a human, you know, bump into a human, cause any harm as much as possible. All those fail-safes are built into it, and it will always override to a human. So that's a fail-safe in these systems and also in many others.
So you say this thing's coming out of China.
Well, it's available now. You can actually buy them.
Right, cost-wise... They seem the industrial guys in China seem to be able to do realistic prices.
Yeah, somewhere between 30 and 40K US is what I'm being told, which is really reasonable when you compare it to an employee. I mean, it's almost terribly decent in price.
You don't have to insure
compared
it,
to a human 1 year salary. Well, that's a good question.
Health-wise, you don't.
Oh no, not in that sense at all.
No, not.
I mean, there is no health insurance for this thing. You need a screwdriver and a hammer to fix it.
I mean, that can really cost companies a load of money, can't it, that area? So maybe.
Yeah, it can. And this is useful. You know, in the past, we've talked about other robots, and this is where I kind of get really excited about this thing more than I normally do. I mean, in the warehouse, it's terrific. I can see great application for it. But the fact it has 2 feet, stands on the ground, says to me that only some warehouse uses for it. But we've talked in the past about it being robots being used in aged care, for instance, and in Japan and in some places in Australia, where under the guidance of a nurse, that these robots can pick up a frail patient or an infirm patient and perhaps take them over to the bath, which is something that's been done by humans, picking them up out of a bed, putting them into a bath. But when you have a robot doing it, which is the case in Japan for at least 10 years, I think maybe 15 years, where a nurse uses one of these devices, I start to think that this could be really helpful because, again, the 24/7 operation, you've got a robot that can literally work all day, every day. If we take it into the same hospitals, there are a growing number of hospitals now that use robots for porters. When they're taking a patient from one ward to another or from the ward to the theatre or somewhere else, ward to x-ray, it's actually not being done by a human increasingly. It's done by a robot that pushes the bed for that, with that patient in it. This, again, to me, would be a really great purpose of it. So there are other places that we could use it. There are drones, for instance, that use batteries now to be able to oversee transport, to oversee crime and things. If they could swap out their battery quite quickly, that, I think, would also be an interesting use.
It's incredible that we're actually talking about batteries. I mean, I don't know why. It's just because they've been around since forever. But we're actually talking about the good old battery. Take it out, put it in.
Yeah. We are. And part of the article, I talked to that also, that I'm hoping that they've gotten much better over the years. They last longer and all kinds of things. But I'm imagining the day where we will get to a battery that basically lasts 24/7, regardless of whether we charge or not, because it just does. And I always think back to the old kinetic watches. Remember, we used to have the old watch that literally, when you wore it, it just wound itself up automatically?
Yeah.
those kinds of things still make sense to me, but we have to see them in operation again in these larger cases.
Well, this is brilliant. Go to Morris's blog, morrisfuturist.com. Whilst we have a couple of minutes left, how have you gotten on with Google's new AI search? Because I think I found my first anomaly with it the other day.
Yeah, not surprised. So I think it's doing really well for what it is. I also write an article on that, if you want to have a look at it at the blog,
yeah.
The good, bad and the ugly of it. To me, it's working really well. My concern is that we have taken to it really quickly. So people now, in the article I cite the research, which says 60% of searches now don't click on anything. In other words, what you read Google tells you, you take as gospel, and you don't move on to look for anything else. 60%, that's a worldwide stat in the last 4 months or so. And I give you the source for that in the article too. That worries me, Phil, because we're narrowing our search, we're narrowing our thinking.
Indeed, we stopped there.
We're already just beginning to accept, well, Google said it's so, not giving us choices. It is if we look for them, but don't really need the choice. Google's explained it well enough. I think that's good enough and I'm ready to move on. 60% already.
Let me throw this thing at you real quick. So I was interested in a thing called a Zoom recorder, a microphone. It's a real tasty recorder and there's different kinds of microphones, blah, 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 right? It's a piece of kit we use. And I said, tell me about the Zoom blah, blah, blah mic. And it took Zoom, the chat platform, and it took some information from that, and it said something about Zoom mics, microphones, that I was interested in. It literally chucked them all together and invented a totally new thing. I couldn't get a straight answer about a simple microphone.
It hallucinates. And once it's stuck in that loop, you cannot get out of it, can you?
Google going, here it is, definitive.
Yeah. And that's why that 60% figure worries me so much, because I'm telling you now, you saw through that immediately, but there would be people there who would not and who would see this and just read it and accept it.
Well, I double took on it. I'm like, are you making this up? And he was making it up. No question.
Absolutely. Hallucinations still exist in this space. If it doesn't know something, it can't tell you it doesn't know something. It just doesn't do it. It just makes something up and it says, well, this is what I think it is, and it gives it to you. So we've got to be careful. Also quickly on that, for businesses, our small business people and others that are in this space, SEO, which is search engine optimization, which is that way that we used to push our services up the Google list so it would come up quicker on the list of people, is now also being extended into what is AI search now. So you've got to do SEO and this also this other side to make sure that what you're saying is in fact what comes up as part of that first crease of information for people.
I'd be very interested to see, Morris, if you take a niche word that has two very different purposes, like I did, and see what it says to you. I've got to go because it's news time, but fascinating as always talking to you. If you want to find out about the robot that changes its own battery, morrisfuturist.com. Talk to you next week.